Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, November 14, 2016. Sudan government arrest a known number of activists in Khartoum.
We took some measures, even to the extent that we arrested about 11 of the activists. And this is for temporary, and are going to be released. Maybe one or two are going to be presented to court.
And the governor of Jubek State has banned nightclubs in South Sudan's capital, Juba.
Enforcing the security organs and deploying them at the right places would be the best or an effective way of selling security.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Sudan's National Intelligence and Security Services operatives have arrested dozens of political activists, journalists, and a number of doctors' union for allegedly inciting Sudanese people to resist the government's decision to cut subsidies on commodities including fuel and medicine. As Nabil Biagio reports from Khartoum, the government says the arrests were necessary to prevent what could have turned into what the authorities in Khartoum are calling bloody protests against price hikes.
The opposition umbrella group known as the Sudan Call held a press conference over the weekend to condemn the arrests. Maryam Al-Sadiq is the deputy chairman of Sudan's largest opposition party, the Umma Party, and a member of the Sudan Call. Speaking in Arabic, she says the government's decision to lift subsidies on fuel and medicines is unfair and must be resisted.
We in Sudan Call will continue to resist these measures, and we call on the government to reverse them immediately and release all those who have been arrested, political activists, reporters, and civil society members, and everyone else.
Amani Al-Malik is a member of the opposition Sudan Congress Party. Al-Malik represented the families of the Sudanese who have been arrested, including her husband.
We stand behind them and we are aware that we could get arrested ourselves. We will stage sit-ins and speak against these arbitrary arrests on the street. We demand freedom for all and call on all the Sudanese people to stand with us and to stand for their rights.
Political commentator Saleh Mahmoud says the government increased the prices of commodities to generate tax money to sustain the war in Darfur, South Kordofan, and Blue Nile states.
They adopted policies definitely led to the current situation, which is very much also marked with corruption, nepotism, and again violations of basic human rights and international humanitarian law, especially in the areas of armed conflict in Darfur, South Kordofan, Blue Nile.
Mahmoud says he fears if activists in Sudan continue to protest the recent economic measures, many innocent people will be killed, just like what happened during street protests in September 2013, when more than 200 civilians were killed for resisting price increases.
We are calling upon the AU, UN, Human Rights Council to not neglect what is happening in Sudan, but to keep a close eye on the developments that are expected to happen.
Government spokesperson Ahmed Bilal is blaming the United States for imposing economic sanctions on his country. He says by arresting what he calls political agitators, his government is merely taking precaution to secure the country and prevent a repeat of what happened in 2013.
We took some measures, even to the extent that we arrested about 11 of the activists. And this is for temporary, and are going to be released. Maybe one or two are going to be presented to court. And this is just preventive measures. And I think now things are calm. No problem.
The government introduced price hikes more than a week ago, which affected the prices of diesel and petrol, prompting increases in the prices of basic commodities across the country. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio.
The governor of Jubek State, Agostino Jadala Oani, says his government wants the national government to hand over the management of security in Juba Town to Jubek State authorities. He says the state government will recruit 4,000 new police officers to beef up security in Juba in the wake of robberies and targeted killings. For VOA News, Waki Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Governor Agostino Jadala Oani says entrusting the state government to manage security in Juba can address the security challenges in the capital. He says the state government can do a better job.
Last meeting with the security committee of the state, we passed a resolution that security of Juba town should be handed over to the state.
Oani says in order to address the security challenges facing the capital, his government plans to recruit 4,000 policemen and women to patrol the streets of Juba. He says the national government has already agreed to recruit more police. Governor Oani also says his government has banned night entertainment across the capital, including nightclubs, to protect residents from criminals. Oani says anyone who plans to organize an entertainment at night must seek approval from the state government and county authorities.
نحن عارفين إنه الكتل كبير زي الحصل في غري.
We know that there are a lot of killings now, like what happened in Gurey. 12 to 13 people have died, people's children. What I have done is an order. I have released banning all night entertainments, including watching matches at night and wedding parties at night. If you want to have a wedding party at night, you need to seek an approval from the mayor of Juba. In counties, it has to be county commissioners to approve.
Governor Wani's announcement comes in the wake of recent killing of 13 people who were watching a football game in Juba's Gurey neighborhood by unidentified gunmen. Residents of Juba have mixed reactions to the governor's order. Margaret Victor, a resident in Juba, welcomes the order but says the government should focus on bringing suspected criminals to book.
I think this order is really will be helpful for the citizens. It will just reduce the acts of the criminals' activities that are taking place at night.
Abraham Gabriel is another citizen in Juba. Gabriel says the government should do more to protect citizens.
Enforcing the security organs and deploying them at the right places would be the best or an effective way of selling security.
Last week, artists and event organizers say their clients are not turning out for concerts at night because of deteriorating security in Juba. Some residents say it is not safe to hang out at Juba's various nightclubs. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Some South Sudanese women activists say the government is not doing enough to stop abuses against women. The women say they are waiting to see legal redress for women raped or harassed or sexually assaulted during the recent fighting in July. Michael Atit has the story for VOA from Juba.
Dozens of participants, including women, attended the debate under the theme Shedding Light on Truth and Justice. Gloria Amanuya Amule is one of the women activists who participated in today's debate, says a majority of women who have been sexually assaulted since violence broke out in 2013 have not been compensated. She says hundreds of women have been abused and are still waiting for legal redress.
The woman is the most vulnerable human being on this earth, because if a crisis happens here, even between me and you, if someone comes in here, I'm the one who will be vulnerable. Okay, if they come and they want to rob us, they might only rob your phones and other things. But for me, I may be subjected to rape, you see. They will take my phones, but again, they will go ahead and rape me.
Amanuya says the government should protect women across the country, including those at the grassroots level, to prevent acts of violence against women. She admits women need help to speak out about problems facing them.
I think our personal problem is fear. Yeah, most of the women, they fear to stand up and speak for themselves. And this is not because they intend to, but this is how we have been brought up. The system has taught us that we're supposed to be quiet. You know, we're not supposed to speak. I can quote for you an example of Eastern Equatoria. A woman, totally, you're not supposed to say a word. Even it has gone extra mile whereby the girl child is given out as a compensation.
She calls on women to speak out about abuses they face from men. Aguil Tongaken works for ONAT, an organization that advocates for non-violence and development. She agrees with Amanuia that South Sudanese cultural norms, such as the practice of forcing a rape victim to marry her abuser, are preventing women from accessing justice.
You feel shy about the name of the family. You cannot speak out, and you will feel ashamed. Like, if people knew that you have been raped, or maybe your daughter been raped, it's like you will not be respected in the community. That's why people fear. We want to work hard and even aware people on how to reduce and even how to leave the negative cultural practice.
Lual Garang de Lual is a student of rural development at the University of Juba. He participated in the debate. He admits women in South Sudan have suffered for far too long. He says he believes it is time for the South Sudanese people, both men and women, to stand up for the rights of women.
Women have really suffered in this country. They have gone through rapes, they have gone through violence, either domestic or any other kind of abuse done to them in all categories of humanity.
Bongiri Peter Lado is the executive director for Humanity South Sudan. He says today's debate was intended to encourage women and other stakeholders to take a closer look at the peace agreement and how it addresses women's rights.
Bringing these things forward in a debate like this, we're able to engage all the partners, the stakeholders, including the government, and majorly relating it to the peace agreement. And of course, our base is the peace agreement. It gives us all the mandate to do everything we want. The peace agreement talks about women empowerment, giving the women the Women Enterprise Fund. What are the women doing about it? The women are complaining they do not get the LCs, letter of credits.
A similar debate bringing together religious leaders among other stakeholders is scheduled to take place at the end of this month. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, some South Sudanese say life as a refugee is tough. We'll have that story when we come back.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan. Or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you think it's okay for people to show their emotions in public?
I think it's okay, because some emotions, you cannot stop them. It comes naturally, so I don't think there's a reason why somebody would fight emotions. It's natural. They come naturally, so people should let them flow.
Yeah, I think that to some extent it is okay for them to do, depending on how they express those emotions.
It can be positive, it can be negative, and some people might go overboard, and then it will cause problems.
Yes, regardless of emotions, whether positive or negative, it may be good, or because emotion may be happy or it may be sad. So if it is for good, it's good for them to show, like, you can laugh, you can play with someone. But if it is harming somebody, then it's not good.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese refugees who fled to Uganda recently live in refugee camps, while some refugees prefer to live in urban centers. South Sudanese refugees in northern Uganda's Gulu town say though they face challenges, they feel more secure here and have good relations with the host community. For VOA News, Bonifacio Taban reports from Kampala.
35 years old, Rachel Ajagziu sits on the veranda of her two-bedroom house as she prepares food for her children. Three of her children are playing on the dusty ground a few meters away. Ajak is among hundreds of South Sudanese residing in Gulu Kanyagoga, a low-income residential area. She says life here in Gulu is challenging but far better than in the refugee settlement camp. She said her entire family of six survived only on the wage her husband received every month. Ajak husband teach in various local primary schools in the town. Speaking in Dinka through an interpreter, Ajak explained.
She's saying she doesn't have any job, no farm, nothing, but at least the kids go to school through the husband's support.
Ajak said he left South Sudan following the outbreak of conflict in December 2013. She said she and her husband chose to live in Gulu because they felt unsafe in the refugees camp. She said the family feels safer in Gulu town, which is far from the South Sudan border. Ajak and the other South Sudanese family are under the local leadership of Ato Florence. Florence is the head of the area, Local Council 1, or LC1, the smallest administrative unit in Uganda local government system. Florence said, unlike in the past, nowadays the South Sudanese refugees relate quite well with the host community.
The relationship between the South Sudanese and the host communities in my area is very fine because they have no issues with rent. They even chat with the neighbors because they are now used to them, not as in the previous days when they used to quarrel with the neighbors.
Florence said she always worked hard to help the South Sudanese family to acquire land as well as outpouring in her area. She said the locals are cooperative and appreciate her work. She said the good relationship with the host community has helped the refugees integrate into the community.
I don't have any problem with them because they are good and peaceful, since we are all the same people with one historical background.
Chandra Lucy, another South Sudanese refugee living in Gulu, say like life in town because he feels more safer here than in the camp. She said there's nothing he sees in Gulu town as a disturbing, like fighting, beating someone, or even breaking your door, or being called out at night. There's nothing. Shandrake, another South Sudanese resident of Kanyagoga, agrees that the refugees enjoy good relation with the national in the area.
Our relationship is in a good way. Let them continue also to welcome us and have a good relationship with them, so they should not disturb each other. Since we are brothers and sisters, when South Sudan happened to have crisis, the good place for us to stay is Uganda.
But Ajak, Lucy and Rich note that language barrier hinder communication between the South Sudanese refugees and the locals in Kanyagoga area. For BOA News, I'm Bonifacio Taban, reporting from Gulu, northern Uganda.
From Gulu, we move to Torit, where some South Sudanese women who were refugees during Sudan's civil war say they will not flee the country again, even though the current security and humanitarian situation in South Sudan is pushing people to seek refugee in camps outside the country. The women say life as refugees is not easy. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio files from Torit.
South Sudanese women fled their homes in the 1980s and 1990s at height of the war between the Sudan People's Liberation Army and the Khartoum government. They were then repatriated to South Sudan after the signing of the Comprehensive Peace Agreement 2005 between the SPLM and the ruling National Congress Party in Khartoum. Ayo Agnes Otim was once a refugee in Buyale settlement camp. Agnes learned tailoring in Uganda and now makes a living out of the profession. Agnes says though she got skills from Uganda, her experience as a refugee was not pleasant. She says she has no plans of leaving South Sudan.
Those days when we went for the camp, when we were still young actually, the life was not all that good. First of all, people were dying of cholera from the beginning. You find people are many, toilets are not enough. All that, the food also was not all that good. The environment actually was not good. And as we already back in our country, I don't think now nothing can make me to go back, because it is hard to work hard and also we let our country be okay to like other Uganda, Kenya, as people are saying. For them also, I think they it was a hard working and struggling. That's why they are okay.
Agnes says she understands that food shortages are pushing many people to seek refuge in Kenya and Uganda. She is encouraging citizens to work hard and produce food rather than fleeing to a refugee camp to depend on humanitarian assistance. Ram Ramadan was once a refugee in Rhino Camp in northern Uganda. Ramadan says some of the host communities in Uganda were not friendly to the refugees.
We have been tortured with the people there.
You dig there your field, you get your food there, they come and grab this food from you, they give something from you, and they have been disturbing us a lot with our children. Your children goes to school, at times they beat your children and the way you refugees, you Sudanese, you are so many things.
But Ramadan said despite the challenges at the refugee camp, life was much better than back home in South Sudan. She says she will stay amid the challenging economic crisis in South Sudan. Martha John, a mother of four, has not fled South Sudan. She says she too does not think it is a good idea to flee the country and become a refugee. She says she hopes the situation in South Sudan will improve and people will live peacefully again.
During the last war, I stayed in Dubai, never went out because I love my country. There's war, people will die, but not all. I trust in God and I pray God I remain with my children. Never, I will never go. And I will never send my children out from my country. I love my country so much. If there is a war, or God plan to give something wrong, I believe I will die in my country. I will never go out.
56-year-old Mary Joan fled South Sudan in 1989 and settled as a refugee in a Agodjo settlement camp in northern Uganda's Adjumani. Joan says she is convinced that the best thing to do is to settle permanently in South Sudan despite the ongoing conflict. Joan says this time around, she does not feel like going back to a refugee camp, but rather die in South Sudan.
When we first arrived in the camp, we were put under trees for the first 3 months. And at the camp, many of our children died because of weather changes. That is why I am saying I am not willingly to go back to the camp. My children are also scattered across South Sudan. So if the situation becomes worse, I better die in my house. To address the issues of food shortages, I believe I will collect firewood and sell to earn some money to buy food or get wild leaves and eat.
But Siama Margaret, who was also a refugee in Agodjo in northern Uganda, says the situation in South Sudan is difficult and she is planning to leave the country and seek refuge in a neighboring country.
I had thought South Sudan was my home and even wondered if I would ever leave if there was trouble. But now with this situation, how can I stay? The major problem is that children are not studying. If there was good education, it's better as you can see. Children come to collect grain that falls on the ground to a quantity of a cup and take home for their mother to prepare something to eat. These are some reasons making people to go as refugees.
Siama says a majority of the people fleeing South Sudan have no food for their families. She says if the humanitarian assistance is provided to South Sudanese in their villages, many would not seek refuge in the neighboring countries. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Torit.
South Sudan and Uganda have signed an agreement to enhance trade between the two countries. The agreement allows the two countries to establish what is known as one-stop border post to ease clearance of goods and prevent delays on both sides of the two countries' borders and help traders import goods. For VOA News, Tito Justin reports from Juba.
The agreement was facilitated by Trademark East Africa, an organization that works to improve trade in the East African region. Belgium, Canada, Denmark, Finland, United States and the United Kingdom will fund the building of the one-stop border post. Ambassador Joseph Ayok Anei, the Undersecretary in South Sudan Foreign Affairs Ministry, signed the agreement on behalf of the South Sudan government. Ayok says the trade agreement will enhance development in South Sudan. Under the deal, South Sudan will be assisted with the standard testing equipment to check the quality of goods being imported into the country. Ayok says the agreement will remove non-tariff barriers such as delays in clearing goods at border posts. He says Both Uganda and South Sudan will also carry out joint technical training of border control to understanding how one stop border post operates. Ambassador York says the trade agreement will also provide employment to citizens of both countries.
The idea of having one stop border post is really to facilitate movement of goods and people. So people who are going from here to Uganda can go quickly, not to be stopped for hours and hours on the borders. And people who are coming from Uganda to this country, that to facilitate for them that their goods or vehicles can come quickly and speedily, rather than being stopped on the border for hours and hours.
He says the deal will enable border control officers from both countries to legally perform statutory functions outside their national territory. Ayok says the aim is to empower small-scale retailers, especially women, to participate in a cross-border trade.
Also to enhance women trade program to promote inclusivity and equality between women and men. That means that a small business, those who come to sell bananas or vegetables from Uganda, we empower them, enhance them, and make life easy in crossing borders for them.
He says a free trade between the two countries will strengthen the value of the South Sudan pounds. Ayok says once more goods begin to enter South Sudan from the neighboring countries, especially Uganda, competition is likely to increase, leading to a drop in commodity prices. Insecurity across South Sudan remains a major threat to the business sector in the country. In recent weeks, traders in Juba have complained about challenges they face in importing goods, including robberies and attacks on the Juba-Nimule Road. Ayok says implementing the agreement on the resolution of conflict in South Sudan could help cease hostilities and achieve the objectives of the trade deal.
On the political side, we have signed agreement with the UN and JAMIC, and the president made it very clear that we wanted to implement it. Now, implementation of agreement has to take in our diverse culture in this country, South Sudanese. So we need to put our house right.
He says South Sudan is expected to pay Ugandan traders $41 million for items looted and destroyed during the July fighting in Juba. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Duro by DJ Koblon. We have been listening to DJ Koblon with the song Duro. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.